Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we have our first guest for the program this week, who is Jackie Criss. Jackie Criss is co-convener of the Geelong Women's Network, although she could correct me if I was getting the name wrong, because I think it has a bit of a confusing sort of name. And she was part of organising the March for Justice in Geelong, which was quite significant because it attracted over 4,000 people at very short notice. And yeah, so we're going to have a bit of discussion with Jackie about, or I guess, the politics of all the issues that have come out of the federal parliament, and in relation to on the ground organising that she has been involved in. So yeah, good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Jacob. I have Adele Welsh here as well, who's a co-convener of GWUN, and it's the Geelong Women Unionist Network. So there you go.
Oh yeah. Well, good morning to Adele as well. And I guess to start off, Jackie, what can you tell us about what you think about, I guess, all the issues that have come out from the federal parliament around, you know, sexual harassment, rape and sexism? And how did all these kind of events inform the politics of the March for Justice rally that you're part of organising in Geelong?
Gee, that's a big question, Jacob, but anyway, I'll see if I can answer it. So there's a lot to it. Of course, the movement placed a spotlight on misogynistic culture and sexual violence in our most esteemed institution, of which we call Parliament. But I think the movement has been a really fantastic vehicle for women to be able to vent their anger. But also, I think it's been Australia's Me Too moment, in that every day it's quite incredible how many various ministers are being called out. Every day there's a new minister being called out for their sexual misconduct, and in some cases criminal behaviour. But anywhere, what I have noticed, and I'm sure all women have noticed, anywhere where there's a concentration of men in suits, we know that there'll be strong patriarchal systems flourish. And we shouldn't really be surprised, because we know that misogyny exists in the walls of Parliament. We've always known that. And yet the level of sexual violence is surprising, and it is totally shocking. So women are shocked by this. But this story, I think, has a lot of threads, and it gets worse as time goes by. But I think it really has also exposed Scott Morrison as our, you know, supposed great leader, like all his flaws. He's proving himself to be a very bad leader, and he continues to avoid, you see him on TV, he avoids questions, he dodges, he's not dealing with the issues. He's mismanaging. He underestimated the power of women. He obfuscates his responsibilities. But it also exposes men, the Prime Minister and all the other ministers, they're using tactics of perpetrators. So they're gaslighting. The other day we saw him crying, pretending he was a victim, and then all of a sudden he attacked the News Corp reporter for being hypocritical, and yet that should not have been spoken about at all. He acted like he's a victim, and then they do victim blaming and just hiding behind, my wife, my sister, my auntie, whoever, my widowed mother. It's just pretty bad. And the slut shaming that's gone on as well. And him pretending not to know about the rape allegations, I think the cover-up has been staggering, and Laura Tingle has sort of outlined the amount of cover-up that's gone on, which we haven't got to the bottom of yet. But the movement, I think, it's also exposed how fractured our so-called democracy is. And I think it really shows how women do have power when we find our voice. So when the women ministers and the staff, such as the security guard, when they've spoken out, the system and the Speaker of the House, she spoke out against Eric Betts, which was a pathetic response about the spy thing, allegedly, but is he saying then the Speaker of the House is a liar as well? You know, so it opens the door to a lot of questions, but it shows that our system is very weak and can fall like a pack of cards with not much going on. But the movement also has informed the how has it informed the politics? Well, it has opened up the conversation of misogyny. And if this conversation was opened up a little bit when Julia Gillard's famous misogyny speech, but I think we've moved on from there, and I think this has, like, it's really put the misogyny and sexual violence front and centre of our minds at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other things going on as well, but, yeah, so that's my synopsis.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good kind of response. And this is just a bit of an extra question. I just want to hear your quick kind of comment on this. But I happened to be part of the Q&A last night, ABC's Q&A, in terms of being part of the audience. So I got to hear everyone kind of speak and so on. One of the interesting things about Q&A this week is it did start off with a kind of a discussion about this whole issue of sexism in the parliament. And it was sort of weird, but they had Sam Mostyn on the panel. And Sam Mostyn, I'm not sure if you know her, I think she's the chair of Australia's National Organisation for Women's Safety and also part of the Australian Women's Donor Network. And she gave a bit of a response to this whole question about Scott Morrison in the federal parliament, and she almost made an argument that this past week has shown that Scott Morrison has learned from his mistakes and he's willing to make changes. In fact, I think one of those changes that's being foreshadowed is that Christian Porter and what's her name? I forgot. Linda Reynolds are going to be stripped of their ministerial positions, and I'm not sure if that's happened yet, but it's strongly rumoured in the media. Do you actually agree with that comment that Scott Morrison has learned anything about this, because I'm not convinced of that.
Oh, hi, Jacob. Adele here. So Jackie and I are going to respond to questions together, if that's all right.
Yep.
And I didn't see Q&A last night. I think in terms of your question about whether Scott Morrison has learned anything, I think what he has learned is that women won't stand for being lied to. And, you know, we're at a point, I guess, in women's organising where, you know, enough is enough. I think we've always known that women aren't safe at home, aren't safe at work, aren't safe in community. And I think now that we know that women potentially aren't safe in parliament either, I think it's been a big, I guess, what's the right word? It's kind of just hit women really hard. You know, nobody can really hide from sexist abuse anymore because, you know, it's just right there in the public eye. And I think the thing that Scott Morrison has learned is, you know, you actually can't lie when it comes to things like this because you will be found out. And I think the thing that he's sorry about is that he's been caught. And I think as well, he made some really interesting comments in his press conference the other day. And, you know, as I was listening to that, I thought he has known all along that women aren't safe. He was trying to make out that these were kind of new issues, but I think he's known all along and he's made some kind of really broad statements. So I think there's some really clear opportunities there for, you know, for women and socialists and unions to just jump into that space and hold him accountable and demand change.
Well, my next question for either you or Jackie, Adele, is the rally attracted over 4,000 people in a, you know, a small city like Geelong, which I think is, a very good result at such short notice. And of course, I know the Geelong Women's Network played a big role in organising it, which you are all part of. And I guess, what can you tell us about the experiences of organising it? I'd like to kind of hear a bit of kind of reflection on that.
Well, I guess Gwun already has a really strong platform in Geelong. We've done a lot of organising around family violence and equal pay. So we already had existing networks to tap into. So I think that put us in a really strong position, you know, right from the start to be able to, I guess, run with this at really short notice. And we do know, as you know, feminists and unionists and socialists, that we do have to be ready at a moment's notice sometimes to, you know, to tap in, you know, to the mood or, you know, to new issues that arise. And one of the difficulties with the march was that it kind of happened on the back of International Women's Day and the Labor Day dinner. So Gwun's got a really strong tradition in Geelong of running an International Women's Day breakfast. Over recent years, we've broadened that out and we hold a rally as well. And this year's breakfast was really, really well attended. We ran the Women of Steel film as a fundraiser. That was a sellout. We had a really, really strong showing at our Labor Day dinner. And Gwun run a woman unionist of the ward, of the year award, and we actually had three winners this year. So it came at one of the most busy times of the year for us. We used the division of labour model. You know, we delegated work, we had a media liaison, we had media releases ready to go, we had a police liaison. You know, we were lucky enough to be able to use Trades Hall's resources. So, you know, we had the sound system. We offered martial training on the day. We were able to work out our speakers really quickly and tap into our existing networks, you know, to get people to speak. And because we do run at least one rally a year, sometimes two, you know, we kind of had the route already down pat. And in terms of, you know, like how we prioritised who would do what, you know, we recognised that people had different talents. So we tapped into people's existing skills, but you know, sometimes you kind of have to challenge people to get them out of their comfort zone. So we did that as well. And I guess, like, it was just, to me, it was as you'd be aware, Jacob, Gwun's a grassroots women's unionist network. And I think the rally just really tapped in so well to Gwun's kind of core foundations of solidarity and feminism and capturing women's voices. You know, as unionists, we go to a lot of rallies, but I think this one just really, for me, captured, you know, the mood and the heart of women. You know, there were people there from all age groups, schoolgirls, mums, dads with kids on their shoulders, you know, school groups. It was just an amazing, amazing event, and we were just so proud of, you know, our Geelong community to see them come out in such strong numbers.
Yeah, and I guess I want to kind of hear a bit more about the Geelong Women's Network, because the issues that have come out of the federal parliament aren't necessarily new. Given the fact that workplaces themselves often have issues kind of dealing with sexism, especially the issues of workplace harassment. And I guess I want to kind of hear about what is the type of role that the Geelong Women's Network has been playing in campaigning around this issue.
So I would say that we've probably been at the forefront of this for a very long time. So in the past, we've run workshops on family violence, gendered violence, We've partnered from the VTHC women's team, and we've done it, you know, like we've either run workshops or forums or all-day conferences. And I guess, so, you know, when you look at family violence and then gendered violence in the workplace, you know, family violence is seen as, you know, like a home issue. Gendered violence in the workplace is seen as a women's issue, but they're both actually unions issues, union issues. And, you know, I think for the one of the things we know about family violence is that, you know, one in three women who experience family violence are in the paid workforce. And we know that far too many women, you know, fall out of the paid work system because of the violence. So it absolutely is a union issue. And it's an OH&S issue as well. You know, there's WorkSafe legislation now to state that employers are legally bound to provide a safe workplace. You know, not only for bullying, but, you know, for gender violence and sexual harassment as well. So Gwan has played a really, really big role in our local community. And I guess one of the things that we're known for is capturing women's voices. And I think last week at the March for Justice, women just came out en masse and, you know, their voices were really, really heard.
Okay, so just Adele and Jackie, this interview has been great. We're not going to end it, but we'll just get to play a quick announcement, and then we'll get to continue the interview with the rest of the questions we're going to ask. Listeners, you are listening to Green Left Radio, and I'm just going to play a quick announcement, and then we'll be back to continuing our discussion with Jackie and Adele. You are listening to Green Left Radio.
CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. It's about 7:35, and on the phone we've got Adele Welsh and Jackie Criz from the Geelong Women Unionists Network, or GWUN. Welcome back, Adele and Jackie.
Thank you.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask... my next question is, you've just recently written an article for Green Left on the kind of March for Justice, and I guess you quote one of your, to quote one of your comrades, Zita, and she stated in the article, socialist women were critical to the success of the Geelong rally and will be to the March for Justice movement going forward. And I guess, what is your kind of elaboration, I guess, on that particular point, especially on terms of what do socialists have to say, really, about this whole question of women's oppression and sexism?
Yes, okay, you've got to the nub of the issue, I think. But before I get to the nub, I just wanted to say socialist women, most of the socialist women did organise the rally, a part of GWUN. We're not all socialists, of course. We have a lot of left-leaning people as well, women. But we are involved with a strong tradition of unionism and activism and organising in a methodical way. But we do stick our necks out a lot in times, and so we do push our unions with progressive demands, and sometimes we win and sometimes we don't, and sometimes it's quite difficult, but we try and do that, and I do that with my fellow nurse friends. We try and push our union, you know, with different... motions at our delegates' conferences.
But with particularly to this issue, the March for Justice, the main organisers in Canberra, so they, their demands are more about inquiries into the parliamentary processes, holding ministers to account, that sort of thing. So there'll be either internal, it's about 10 demands or whatever. A lot of it is about inquiries, whether it's external or internal, and reforming the Sex Discrimination Act. But the white socialist feminists need to be involved with the sexism and misogyny. We see this through the prism of capitalism. And so it is the, what we think is it the unpaid labour of women that keep capitalism alive and well. And so we know that without the oppression of women, capitalism probably wouldn't flourish and would not exist. So there's, we know that 50% of the population is subjugated, and because of this, capitalism continues to thrive and, you know, profit. But its very survival depends on the continuation of patriarchy in all its forms, whether it be sexism or, you know, sexual harassment or rape culture. So we know the unpaid labour of women equates to about 59% of the GDP, and that's a figure that comes up a lot, 50 to 59%. But in 2018, the Victorian government quantified it, which was amazing. So they actually did studies, so you can look it up and prove it. So it's calculated as $205 billion of the Victorian GDP is calculated as unpaid labour of women that women contribute. So our little state of Victoria couldn't survive on our unpaid labour. And we need to work. So what we're saying in, as the socialist women, we, as part of the demands of the movement, we want to push for equal pay and economic equality, because if we don't have economic equality, we're not going to have equality. So if we can educate our children, we can try and change the culture, but we see underpinning that culture is profit from capitalism, from the unpaid labour of women. So until we fix that, we're not going to fix the problem. So our demands, and we're not going to smash patriarchy in 2 seconds, so we understand that. So we need some demands that are achievable, and I think this is the climate where we can achieve some wins. And so one of the wins, which we haven't sort of worked it out all yet, but we do think that free childcare, now that is the demand that women have gone, Australian women have wanted forever. But we did see a little snippet of it in COVID. When they want to find the money, I mean, they can spend billions of dollars on war and take money, give it, you know, subsidies for various corporations. I know Alcoa got lots of subsidies when they were here, and then they just left. Same with Ford. So the coal barons get millions and billions of subsidies. And yet we can't in this country get free childcare and things like that. So that's what we want to look at. We want to achieve some economic equality. One of the things we have been talking about is really supporting the Early Educator campaign, because they've had their campaign to try and get better wages, and that's a campaign we might, you know, we want to put, we've always supported them, but maybe start picking out a few demands that we can really get our teeth into and win. And this is the time, I think we're at a time in history in Australia. This is, I don't think we've ever had this epoch in time where we can actually have a go at winning some demands.
I just wanted to stop you there to kind of go into the concluding kind of question, because we actually got another interview that we've got to go progress to. But there should be time for this final kind of question. And I guess I want to sort of conclude by kind of asking, what do you kind of think the next steps for the March for Justice campaign should be? In fact, quite recently in the Australian Financial Review, sort of prominent sort of feminist Anne Summers kind of made this sort of argument that March for Justice should basically turn into, I guess, a marginal seats campaign and a kind of interesting, well, to elect Labor, of course, as if Labor have really done anything. And I guess, yeah, want to kind of hear your comments on what you think the next steps would be. And I've sort of also given an example of what one particular tendency thinks the next steps should be.
And look, hi, Jacob, it's Adele here again. I think, you know, political lobbying has to be a part of, you know, any movement or any campaign, because we do need the legislation, you know, to back up the changes on the ground that we want to see. But, you know, a campaign that's based solely on political campaigning is bound to fail, because what we know is family and gendered violence happens everywhere. It happens in, you know, homes, workplaces, communities. It happens across the political spectrum. We know that it happens in unions. So electing a political party in the hopes that that party will solve this issue is like, I would say the movement would be just setting themselves up for failure. So what one would want to see, and look, we are still talking, you know, to the main March for Justice organising group, but what we would like to see is, as Jackie's already mentioned, we're going to develop up our own set of demands. And we are going to join Victoria Trades Hall Women in some lobbying. But, you know, some of our demands, like Jackie said, would be free childcare, ending casualised insecure work, increasing the NES standards for 10 days of paid family violence leave, increasing superannuation contributions. And in terms of the 10 days of paid family violence leave, you know, currently there's only 5 days of unpaid leave. So women, you know, who are more likely to be in low paid, insecure work and have less financial resources to start off with, they're far more disadvantaged than, say, a woman who works in an industry with an EBA for 20 days of paid family violence leave. So we think at the minimum 10 days of paid leave should be in the NES. And what we're going to do, and we're hoping to make an announcement really quickly, really soon, what we want to do is have an open planning forum in Geelong, and we'll bring the community together, hear their voices and, you know, develop some demands and our next actions together with the community.
Well, thank you very much, Adele and Jackie. And do you just have any short, brief, final comments you'd like to make?
I guess for me, it's really important for the momentum that's been gathered around the March for Justice, you know, to continue to be harnessed and to be moved forward. I think it would be a really, really big shame if, you know, this was to end now. So we've got some momentum, you know, there's a national platform. There's so much media interest, but what we need to do is take this campaign out of the talking on TV and newspaper articles into real clear actions that are going to benefit women.
Well, thank you very much for the interview, Jackie and Adele. And,
yeah, cheers, comrades. Staunch as. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Okay.
Thank you so much, Jacob. Bye.
All right. You're just listening to an interview with Jackie Criz and Adele Welsh from the Geelong Women's Network, and they were both part of organising the March for Justice that happened a few weeks ago in Geelong. Now, we're just going to play a quick announcement, and then we'll be going on to our second interview for the program with Josh Cullen, who is the Secretary of the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union. You're listening to Green Left Radio.